Have you heard about the new MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle? The MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle is the easiest, most advanced nozzle ever, protecting you from the dangers of diesel exhaust fumes. With its patented flex magnet technology, the Pro Nozzle easily attaches with one hand from a standing position, can snap on from any angle, and fits flush to the apparatus, saving a ton of space. And MagnaGrip is the only exhaust removal system that offers a true 100% seal. For free grant assistance and to learn more, go to MagnaGrip.com.
This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Welcome to The Backstep, where we talk about safety, survival, and other things. Welcome to The Backstep.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of guys out there who you hate the disco era, but Disco Inferno, one of my top tens, man. This is Ron Kay calling from New York. Calling from New York, and I'm online here with my buddy Tommy A. Tommy, how you doing, pal?
Good. Yeah, Disco Inferno, you're showing your age, buddy.
Yeah, listen. I was a vision in polyester at one time, you know. Yeah, me and John Revolta. Me and John Revolta.
Yeah, I was going to say, weren't you his co-star in, what the hell was the name of that?
Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, they filmed that in Brooklyn, man, in the old country. Yep, there was a club called Superstars. And at first, when they opened up, they called the Jesus Christ Superstars because there was a Broadway show on called Jesus Christ Superstars. And then they changed it to Superstars. And it had the lit dance floor and everything. I was in that club in the 70s, and that's where they filmed the dance scene that he did. But I digress.
Yep.
Now, Tommy, if I had a polyester suit on now, it would be the only thing sprinkled down my body. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. So I know you're still in Gettysburg, and for the edification of all of our listening audience, all three of you. Tommy and
yeah,
I just got
so
done.
Very
yeah, we just got done
with the time change.
Yeah, we just got done with the memorial in Emmitsburg this weekend. I headed home last night. Tommy's still in the Gettysburg area. Visiting with some friends and doing some stuff. So we're going to have on Gary Critchbaum, Chief Critchbaum, currently working for the FRCE. He is my deputy incident commander for the memorial. As you know, I'm the IC, and Tommy's the operations chief. And we had another fabulous, successful weekend taking care of our families. And we'll kind of expound upon that as Gary comes on. And we'll talk to him about some of the initiatives that the FRCE is doing. They really make us great headway with the programs, and they're not just fire service. It's first responder center for excellence. So they work with police services, they work with EMS, and they're getting the word out. So they're doing some great stuff. So, Tom, I don't want to go too far into the Memorial Weekend because I want to get Gary's perspective as well. But I think we had pretty good success, you know.
I was extremely impressed, not only with the quality of the services, both the candlelight and the memorial itself, but also with everything that went on behind the scenes. It, you know, there's a couple bumps in the road, but you expect that. But for the majority of it, I'm thinking, man, it went off great. The weather, oh, was so cooperative. And, and you know, the bottom line is it's, the families had a good experience, I think.
Well, and you know what? And of course, we'll get Gary on here in a couple of minutes, but what we do in the command center, we're just putting out spot fires, and that's okay, because that keeps us engaged, gives us something to do, and for those of you who've been in part of large events like a Fallen Firefighters Foundation Memorial Weekend or similar, and it could be a local conference, convention, whatever, how many moving parts go into that. And, you have, again, most of the work is done beforehand. It's the planning meetings and the sessions and the phone calls and the emails and the Zooms and the booms and all that stuff and to get it ready. And then all you really should have is a couple of spot fires here and there. And once the ceremony starts, we always say at 10 o'clock when those bells ring on Sunday, we flip the switch on automatic. Now, it's not to say that things couldn't happen during the ceremony, but we have a structure. We have a command structure. It was interesting. We were visited before and after the ceremony by two of the staff chiefs in FDNY who I work for, two real terrific guys, Assistant Chief Joe Jordan and Deputy Assistant Chief Frank Lee, who's Chief of Training. And they came amongst probably another dozen New York City Fire people. But they came over to see us before and after, and when they walked in the command center, they looked. We have signs hanging over every position, command, logistics, planning, the usual, and then one says production, and one says escorts, and one says law enforcement, whatever. So Joe Jordan kind of looked up and he says, "You kind of expanded the system." I said, "Well, we got 25 working units here, safety, security, and transportation." And parking and then transportation and buses. And so it's not just the usual seven boxes. It's 25 boxes for us, but it all comes together. We have, I always talk about having the A team, and certainly as Gary gets on the call soon, then he's a big part of that A team, as well. So I think we had many more hiccups last year. Last year was a weird year for us. At the end of the day, all of our command hiccups are unseen by the families, and that's really the key. As long as that stuff stays internal, we want to give the families the best experience they can get, try to give them a little bit of closure if we can, and let them know that we're there for them and they're not going to forget their firefighter. That's really the bottom line.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. We had... the highest-ranking federal government official was Deanna Criswell, the FEMA director. She spoke and delivered the presidential message. And then U.S. Fire Administrator Lori Merrill, she was there. She spoke a few minutes and kind of made the rounds. And Lori's good, man. She's in the trenches. In fact, she's hosting a three-day symposium now at the Fire Academy. I think they called it the Presidential Symposium on Fire Prevention and Protection or something
it's,
like that.
It's the Summit on Fire Prevention. I thought it was kind of interesting because both your shop, FDNY, and also Adam Thiel from Philly Fire are presenting tomorrow, and they're talking about the multiple loss of life fires that the both organizations had earlier. How many did, what was it, 17 got lost in that fire in the city?
Yeah, it was in the Bronx on January 9th. And in fact, Frank Lee was the incident commander.
Oh, okay.
He had the citywide duty that day, and he was the IC. He's the one who kind of made history in the city. When he saw what he had, he said to the dispatcher, transmit a fourth alarm. He says, I only want CFRD engine companies for us that certified first responder D. I want a fourth alarm in engines only, CFRD engines, and tell them when they park at staging, just bring medical bags. That was never that was never transmitted before over the New York City Fire Department radio. But wow. You know, Frank's, you know, he's at the top. He's at the top of the echelon there, and he knows what the heck he's doing. That's for sure. And that was his order of the day. So, sure enough, they came in, and it was the mess. So I think he's talking about that fire tomorrow. And Adam had one not too far, I think, before that. I think Adam's fire was just before that.
Yeah, I think they lost 12 in theirs.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, as you know, Tommy, I'm a long-time student of historic fires and fire protection and prevention, all that stuff. And, you know, when you go back and you look at America Burning that was published in 1973, and then 25 years later they did America Still Burning on the anniversary and wrote another book. And then I guarantee you the next 3 days at the Fire Academy, they're talking about the same stuff. They're talking about the same stuff.
I think from the historical perspective, they were going back to some of the stuff that Harry Truman did with the creation of Fire Prevention Week.
Right. So I think the unfortunate part of it is, you know, history repeats itself. You know, the Coconut Grove was in 1945. And you know, 495 people died here. And then in 2003, we had a nightclub fire in Rhode Island that killed 100 people. So it's like, you know, how can this still be happening? You know, how do we keep repeating? You know, the Rhythm nightclub fire in Mississippi was 2 years before the Coconut Grove. You know, and then the Coconut Grove happened. So on and on it goes. But you know what? I tell people who are skeptical, you know, about codes and fire prevention, I said, listen, imagine how bad it would be if we weren't doing anything. You know, that's really, if you think about that, it's like, well, if we set up, listen, this fire prevention crap ain't working and the codes really ain't doing it, let's just chuck it all out the window. It would be thousands of times worse. So at least we have it 95% under control. You know what I'm saying? So
I was working earlier on a piece. I had a buddy of mine sent me a survey for his capstone project. He's working on his bachelor's. And one of the questions on the survey was, why do fire departments investigate fires? And to me, it's a no-brainer. It's the entire basis for fire prevention.
Yeah.
You got to know what the problem is before you can correct it.
Absolutely. And you know what? I've told people, I've told students that, you know, in fire science classes at the college for years. I said, why do we investigate? So we get cause and origin. Okay, why do we want to know about cause and origin? And they kind of give you the stare, and I said, it's in the interest of prevention. If we say that, you know, the heater was too close to the bed, then we can tell people, don't put your heater close to the bed, and we prevent the fires, you know, and that kind of hits home. It's simple analysis, but yeah, that's why. And even like I remember in the Jersey code, it said fire, you know, the local fire official is charged with investigating all fires in the interest of fire prevention. It kind of says it right in there. So I get it. I get it. Gary should be popping any second. Tom, I told him to call around 7:40 or so. He'll be popping in any second. Certainly God was smiling on us, pal. We had a beautiful weekend weather-wise. A little chilly on Saturday night during the candlelight, but yesterday was perfect. I mean, you know, the sun come up and it did its thing and warmed everybody's soul, so to speak. And we did. I will tell you, man, the pipes and drums and the honor guard this year, holy mackerel! Listen, in any huge pipe and drum band, somebody doesn't get the cue to stop playing after they all the last note bop, and you always say at the end like one guy. Not yesterday. Those guys were polished, picture perfect. They were, I mean, unbelievable. And as were our honor guards. I mean, they were right on it. Gary's calling in now. Hold on a second. I'm going to bring him right in.
All right.
Chief Critchbaum, is that you?
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Good evening. For everybody, this is Assistant Chief Gary Critchbaum, recently retired from Prince George's County, Maryland. And currently the program manager for the FRCE, the First Responder Center for Excellence, and more closely known as our deputy incident commander for the Memorial weekend. Gary, Tommy and I were just starting to, we wanted to kind of wait for you, but we just started doing our reflections on the weekend. And I was just talking about, as you were dialing in, about the precision of the pipes and drums this year. And there was no extra at the end after every song stopped. I mean, they all stopped perfectly. And then, of course, our honor guard. I mean, they were spit polished, perfect, making all the moves all at the same time, man. I tell you, those guys, that whole gang, so damn impressive, you know. They're really so damn impressive this year.
Yeah, and every year, you know, they're amazing every single year. But I got to say that this year particularly was very, very sharp. They were very, very good. So,
yeah, I think they were, you know, the honor guard was in perfect lockstep. They had their turns and twists on command. And then, like I said, the pipe band. I mean, I listened to them a couple times, you know, and I mean, stopping, starting, no extra drum beat, no extra wind coming out of a bagpipe or nothing. I mean, the guys are really, really spot on. And I congratulate this year's honor guard commander was Hal Grout out of Connecticut. And, of course, our buddy, Odie. Odie, we call him Odie. I don't know why I call him Odie.
Odie does a great job, doesn't he?
He does. And he's retired a couple of years out of Fairfax. And he moved out to, I don't know, does he live in Utah or something or Idaho? But he comes back every year and he whips them guys up in a day or two. And man, like I said, the band and the honor guard this year was just so freaking spot on. But in general, you know, I'd like to chat about the weekend for a couple of minutes. And certainly the weather was with us. We know that. But I think we had an air of success. You know, Tommy's work crews that did a great job moving everything, and serving the families in the tents. You know, for the folks listening, we started last year. We put up tents because of the COVID issue, so it was kind of like an outdoor dining experience. But our work teams, these are firefighters from all over the country who come to help out every year. They donned aprons. And they served staff, and they served the families. They served them dinner on Saturday and lunch on Sunday, and that system seems to be working famously. We have a new maitre d' out of New Jersey. Greg Collier.
I got to give kudos to Greg Collier from Burlington County. He pulled off an amazing feat with I think they served 900 meals. Saturday night, and then again a lunch that was served Sunday after the memorial service, and that seemed to go off with no problems at all.
And you know, we talk about that. You know, people that are listening saying, "Wow, like firefighters like became waiters and waitresses," and the answer is yeah, because when we put on this weekend. We make it happen, whatever has to happen. And if it means serving dinners and carrying trays of food or whatever it is, we're going to do everything we can for our families to make them comfortable and perhaps even smile a little bit if they can. And so we do food service and we do transportation and buses and we go get them ice cream if they want it too at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, that also speaks to the quality and character of the people that we ask to come to help out. And
the other thing, Ron, is that it's firefighters, it's fire chiefs. We had fire chiefs serving lunches to the families.
Yep.
Not too many places are you going to go around the country that you're going to have a collection of fire chiefs, as you said, willing just to throw on an apron and serve. Drinking food. It amazes me every year the people that come out, what they're willing to do, and, to honor those fans and make that a truly magical experience for them. So.
Yeah, and you know what? When it comes to the whether it's the command staff, us guys, or our work teams that are carrying boxes and everything, there's no rank on the weekend. Mm-mm. Everybody's across the board. Like you said, there's five trumpet chiefs that are serving food and humping boxes and carrying tables and chairs, and they're right alongside a 2-year probationary firefighter doing the same work. So we don't, and it's volunteer firefighters, and there's career guys, and there's industrial guys, and it, you know, so it's basically what gives us commonality is we're there for that cause, number one. And number two, everybody just wears the same damn staff T-shirt, and there's no bars or there's no horns at any of it. So, from that perspective, Gary, I agree with you. It's a little bit magical. It's not quite Disney World, but it is. I mean,
And a shout out to Patty for the staff T-shirts this year, huh?
Yeah, good friend Patty Odbert, who's down in Florida, who just Hurricane Ian flew right over the house and didn't stop for her, which is kind of great for her and Timmy. But she put her artistic work together, so I'm glad you reminded us, because she designed our staff shirt this year, and it came out beautiful. They really are beautiful, and they're identifiable, and they were pretty neat.
Thanks to Under Armour for supporting us once again this year.
Yeah.
The surprise in the middle of all this thing was during the candlelight service, when Garen Mosby from St. Louis Fire Department was doing the MC stuff. What a great job he did.
Rock star. That guy is a rock star.
Yeah, he was impressive. I'm glad he had a chance to stop into the command center yesterday so we can thank him personally. But, he's a keeper. No doubt about that. The guy's a keeper. He's just a great personality and like I told him yesterday, face to face, it was whatever he said came from his heart. It was right from the middle, and he really added a nice spice and air of professionalism to the whole thing on Saturday night. So big thanks to him. Absolutely.
Viewers of the A&E network will probably recognize him as one of the co-hosts of the show Live Rescue, which unfortunately is no longer being aired right now. But I think you can go back and watch some of the older episodes on demand. And he did a great job with that. And when he got up to speak Saturday, I was like, I know this guy from somewhere. And then it finally dawned on me. He's the PIO for St. Louis right now, but I think he was actually a station captain when he was doing the show.
Yeah, he also still holds the rank of captain. He's still a captain. But I think he's, like you said, he's working as the PIO. And what a great guy. Wouldn't you want him to be your PIO for your fire department, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd want him to be everything in my fire department.
Yeah, he's a dynamic dude, no doubt about that. Just don't want to skip back to Under Armour again for our listeners. They've been a sponsor of ours for about the last 5 years, and what they do is they donate our staff T-shirts, and then we pay to have them screened, whatever screen we want to put on them. But they've been donating shirts for about 5 years, and they've been really good to us. They're located in Baltimore, Maryland, so they feel a connection to the foundation, which is also in Maryland, of course, you know, Baltimore had a tragedy this year. They lost a couple of firefighters. And when I called the contact there, he said, Ron, he says, it's amazing you called now. He says, we're still reeling from what happened in our city. Where in the past, you know, the death of a firefighter on the line of duty is a tragedy, and people kind of get that. And maybe for a day, it's headline news. But these guys, the Under Armour folks, have gotten so in tune with the fire service because of our relationship with them, that he says they were feeling it. He says the whole staff was, because they know that they make that nice T-shirt donation every year to the foundation for us to have our staff shirts. So today, our good friend Patty, who designed the shirt, she sent a really nice email with a picture of all of our guys in their shirts for this year to our contact, and telling them how great they came out, how great they looked. And with just the debt of gratitude to Under Armour for supporting us year after year. So we took care of them with a nice thank you. You know, Patty did that.
on our behalf. So, but I think, you know, for those of you who are listening, one of the hopes, one of the main hopes that we have for our Memorial Weekend every year is to somehow give the family some closure. And we only know that because we get a lot of letters. Not every family writes in after and says, hey, this was great. But we get probably, you know, 30 or 40% of those families that were with us, we'll get a letter or an email. And it talks about that they got some closure. And that's the payoff. That's for us. That's the payoff. If we can give some closure to some of the families who have been kind of suffering along the way, and now they have a little bit of closure and they get it, and they now know that their firefighter will never be forgotten, will always be remembered, is enshrined on that national monument, blah, blah, blah. That gives them a little bit of closure to say, okay, you know what? You know, our guy is kind of in good hands now, and those people will be the custodian of that. So that's the payoff for us. And verbally, some of us heard a lot of it during the weekend. Chief Ron Sarnicky, our director, our executive director, he spoke to some of the families along the way, and they were just so grateful and impressed and all of that stuff that we made a fuss over them and their firefighter. And that's what counts, man. That's what keeps us coming back every year. For the benefit of our listeners, next year's ceremony is in May, and it will be in May from now on. The foundation had it in October for 40 years, and the board of directors are moving it to May. So we have a short turnaround window. You know, it's like a caterer. And you have your wedding from 12 to 5, and you got another wedding coming at 6:30. You got to clean up the place, reset the tables, and get ready for the next party. So we have a tight window. We traditionally have an after-action review. We do an AAR with the command staff, probably do that in about 4 or 5 weeks, and off to the races one more time because we have that 7-month short turnaround time. So, guys, I've been kind of hogging it, but you know, I'm passionate about this. But you know, any more perspectives from you guys on the weekend?
No, I think it was just phenomenal. Weather, people, families, the whole 10,000-foot view of the entire operation, I think it really went well.
And how great was it for our command staff? You know, we're bringing in some newer people. You know, we're kind of looking towards the future, and it was so great to bring in folks that kind of had that wide-eyed disbelief, you know, perspective of what we do. You know, it was refreshing. You know, the energy they were creating was, you know, enhanced the maximum energy that we have anyway. It was great. The International Association of Fire Chiefs president, Donna Black, came by, as well as the immediate past president, Chief Stubing from Halifax, Canada. We gave them a private tour of the inner workings, if you will, of the Memorial Weekend, and they were blown away, to say the least. So for me, you know, it was just great seeing people, some of them experiencing this for the first time, almost in disbelief on the magnitude of what we accomplished for this weekend.
Yeah, to that end, we had a whole bunch of people pass through the command center this year. Well, I tell you, Lori Merrill was there from the U.S. Fire Administration. Tanya Hoover came, a deputy U.S. Fire Administrator. A whole cast. You know, we had a lot of folks come through, which is kind of neat. You know, on Sunday, as you guys know, a couple of staff chiefs from the FDNY, a couple of my bosses were there. They came through in the morning before, and afterwards they came over and hung out and wanted to meet everybody. So we did have a kind of a gaggle of we'll call them fire celebrities, kind of come through the place, which was kind of neat. You know, because I think, you know, people are generally interested, because I get that question, how the hell do you guys pull this off every year? You know, so
mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, take a look. You know, and like, you know, Gary, you've taken the two chiefs around. you know, with Donner and the other guy, Stubing, and you know, showing them, and it gives them a sense of what goes on. You know, I always use the equivalent to the Macy's parade on Thanksgiving. And you don't have to be a New Yorker. If you watch the parade on TV, you can imagine what goes into planning that parade. And I knew the Macy's people because I worked with them when I worked in the city the first time when they'd have their 4th of July fireworks every year. And I once asked them about the parade. And they said, that parade's on Thursday. We have a meeting on Friday and start talking about next year. And that's kind of what we do. You know, it's you start planning it the day after. You know, we for those listening, we use a program called Smartsheet. And it's kind of an offshoot of kind of Excel. You can have 25 different units putting information in, and you can hit the button and merge it all together and get master timelines and all that stuff. It's pretty cool. But we start a sheet for next year, this year, while we're in the command center. While, you know, the first day, open up a sheet for 2023, and we start throwing stuff on there of things that we need to improve or to remember to do it and that kind of stuff. So this is an ongoing process. You know, and it's throughout the year. We have a bunch of meetings, and some in person and some with Zooming and all that, but it's a big effort. It's really a big effort. And I think all that hard work kind of comes roaring through on Sunday morning. And then once the ceremony's over, it's like, you know what? We think we did pretty well, and we'll do it again in a couple of months. So, but I'm going to take some liberty here and thank you two guys. You know, you guys make my job. I mean, everybody makes my job easy, you know, and being a guy at the top as the incident commander, it's like I get people give me, hey, you did a great job. And I always say, well, this is a cast of thousands putting this thing on. I mean, if you look at it, we had 800 volunteers on the weekend helping out. You know, the pipes and drums is over 500. And then we have our operational teams and returning fire hero family members. And they're doing check-in and we have transportation gang and everything, you know. So it's 800 people pulling their weight, doing what they need to do, which is why it's so successful. But you two guys are key players. You know, operations, I had that post for 13 years. And of course, Gary is as my deputy. You guys are definitely my key players, along with the command staff that's in that room. So we can all rely on each other and say, hey, don't forget this and don't forget that. And you know when I'm speaking. So that's good stuff. Because I forget a lot of stuff now. But
yeah, and you know, honestly, you know, I'm just extremely grateful and extremely humbled just to be a part of that team, and you know, can never thank you enough for the opportunities you've given me over the years for this event. And I can't think of anything. You know, I've had the opportunity to do a lot of stuff in my career, but there's nothing to me that's a higher honor than being part of that ceremony every year.
Yeah, good. I wholeheartedly agree. And listen, you get the opportunity to do it, but as you know, as not that you're you know, the three of us are kind of in that spot to run the damn thing. We have to bring in quality people, and when we don't get quality people, we ask them to please leave. You know, and we did ask a volunteer member this weekend to please leave and not come back because of their behavior. You know, we're not super strict and we're not like perfect, but when you go way over the top, there's no room for that. You know, because we're trying to do this thing with honor, dignity, and respect, and we don't want anything to tarnish that. So. I'll thank you two guys publicly and the rest of the command staff and everybody else who came out this weekend to make it a success and to give our families some closure. So anything else on the Memorial Week before we move on to other points of interest tonight?
No, I think we covered the memorial. I had a couple items, and Ron, I wanted to put you on the spot with one. The lithium-ion battery symposium that the FDNY Foundation put on not too long ago. Can you speak to that?
I can. I was asked to assist with that, and Chief Jordan had asked me to put together some sort of an operation logistical plan, which we do like in our sleep for the Memorial Weekend, so it was kind of easy for me. But we had foundation, just so people know, the FDNY Foundation is a nonprofit 501c3 that supports the efforts of the FDNY in terms of training and things like that. So they put on these training symposiums and stuff like that a couple of times a year. And this time it was lithium-ion batteries, because it's becoming an epidemic in our city and in a lot of other big cities. So we had 2 days. They sold 200 tickets in a couple hours, and then there was a demand, so they opened it up for another 100. So they sold 300 tickets in 1 day. And we had, Tommy, we had 8 guys from Seattle Fire flew in for this thing.
Wow.
St. Louis, Chicago, across the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, Long Island. So it was a couple of hundred people, 300 people, and basically put together a logistical plan. And so day one was in the auditorium at The Rock. It was all held at the New York City Fire Academy, which we call The Rock because it's on an island. So we call it The Rock, just like Alcatraz, I guess. And if you ask the Probies, they probably feel like they're in Alcatraz, I'm sure. But for 2 days at The Rock, most of them stayed in one or two hotels in Manhattan. We bussed them over every morning and put them back every night by bus. And so day one was basically speakers. We had our hazmat chiefs spoke about their experiences of late. We had Stevie Kerber was there from UL, and he ran a panel. I think it was the afternoon of the first day. I'm just going off the top here. We had people from the bike industry, from the mobility industry, battery operated bikes, scooters, etc. Talked about, you know, the industry itself and how they sell and who they sell to. And, you know, and listen, the bottom line is the batteries that come with a brand new electric bike or electric scooter, those are UL tested and approved batteries. It's the knockoffs that are coming from overseas. Those are the ones that we're losing. Those are the ones that are giving us the problem. The batteries are expensive. They're a couple of $100 when you got to replace them, or if you want to have a spare so you can change them out. And you can get a knockoff for 50, you know, so that's the ones, and they bring them home. A lot of these folks that are using these bikes, they're messenger service, they're a DoorDash, pizza delivery, Chinese food delivery guys. It's a great way to get around the city. So they bring them up into the apartment. A lot of them live in housing projects or medium rise, high rise type buildings in low income neighborhoods. So you can't leave the bike on the street. So put it in the elevator, bring it upstairs, stick it in the hallway in the apartment, and plug it in overnight so you can go to work the next day. And that's where our problems are. You know, other than the fact that they're in the apartment, they usually put them by the egress. So the people are trapping themselves in their own apartments. And we're way past last year's numbers already. I think we're in the 150, 160 range of structural dwelling fires that have started from these devices. So we had a whole gaggle of speakers and scientists, and like I did, the Stevie Kerber kind of guys, you know, you can't go wrong with them on the first day. And the second day, our hazmat guys basically hit it out of the park. They lit off, I think, 5 or 6 of them. So people can actually see it, hear it, know what it looks like, knows what it smells like. We did it outdoors on the fire ground. They put up 8-foot partition plexiglass with a cage over the top, because these things come flying in every direction. It's kind of like a fireworks show that went bad, you know. And the work crowd, because I walked around the crowd during the demos, and I was just like, hey, what do you think? What do you think? And the consensus was, we've seen it. We know what it looks like now. We've watched it. We smelled it. We can hear it. You know, that's the other thing, is the hearing, you know. If the fire is banked down and the smoke is banked down and they're crawling down the hall, you can hear these things, hear what they're doing. So, you know, now we can take all this and pass it on to the people in our department so we can be prepared for it. So it appeared to be a pretty neat success. So they burned the scooter. They burned, I think, 2 batteries on a tabletop. And then they had a Connex box, and they put some furniture in it, and they lit it in there as to simulate an apartment. And the thing was rocking and rolling in 5 minutes. I mean, it's, you know, this stuff is just is wacky. But it was very successful. They also did something neat. They get, you know, those square QR codes. You know, you can hold your phone up. They put that on the back of everybody's ID, and when you went into that with your phone, it was all the slide presentations for the 2 days. It was information. It was the FDNY procedures. And the one thing that we wanted to make clear what the FDNY was doing is, with the way they put it, is we're building the airplane as we're flying it. Because this is new. This is new ground. This is all very new for all of us and the rest of the fire services in the country. So we're building the plane as we're flying it, so to speak, which I thought was a neat way to explain it. But we gave whatever procedures we had written, that was on the QR code, and it, at least to get everybody started in trying to handle these things. But at the very end of the day, once the batteries take off, you can't stop them. You can submerge them in water. They'll boil the water right out of the bucket. So you got to just protect the explosion and let it go. That seems to be it right now.
You know, one of the things I wanted to mention in talking about this was Billy Goldfeder had posted a notice on the secret list that contains the link to the Google Docs that you spoke of, Ron, that FDNY was kind enough to provide. So if you're looking for that kind of stuff, certainly getting up on the secret list, you can kind of follow that back and be able to access those documents.
Yeah, I don't know when he posted it, but the symposium was September, I believe, 6 and 7, or 5 and 6. So if you went back to the beginning of September, that might have been when Billy put that up on his site. So that's where we're at with that, man.
Cool. I also wanted to mention the loss of FDNY EMS Lieutenant Allison Russo. I saw a deal on the media report that back on the 29th of September, they captured the suspect that murdered her.
Yeah, a civilian chased him down, a store owner. He heard the commotion outside the store because she was walking to the deli for lunch. And a guy with a scooter was chasing him, and then he turned around and went after the guy on the scooter with his knife. And then I think the store owner tackled him from behind and held him for the cops. So it's if I tell you, Tommy and Gary, it's little consolation because that set the job back. Everybody in the city, even anybody in uniform, anywhere, it just kicked us on our ass. I went to the funeral last week. It was probably the largest attended funeral I've ever seen, and the largest attended funeral by the NYPD for a fire funeral. The NYPD was there in droves, people about it. While in fact, when we came out of the service and when they were bringing her out of the auditorium, putting her back into the ambulance to take her to her resting place, I was talking to Sal Cassano, the former fire commissioner in New York, about a whole bunch of things. And I said, Sal, I said, did you notice the presence of NYPD? And he said to me, he says, the cops are working with our EMS people every day, every minute of the day. There's so much shit going on. There's always a patrol car and an ambulance together. So at the end of the day, everybody was feeling it. If you wear a uniform, you were feeling it, because this was a senseless, needless thing. And the whole EMS was there other than those who were on duty, and they were all saying the same thing. She was a one-of-a-kind, outstanding mentor, teacher, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is the person you want around you in the foxhole and stuff. And for her to lose her life like that was just so tragic. But, yeah, we remember her, and just as long as we're on it, one of our fire inspectors died making his rounds last Monday, October 3rd, in Queens. We lost one of our own guys, and waiting to hear on arrangements for that one. So things happen along the way, and here we are. Here we are. Tommy, did you have a couple of things for Chief Krishbaum with the FRCE and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and... Gary, I wanted to mention, obviously, the First Responder Center for Excellence. And I went back up and visited the webpage today just to make sure I knew what I was talking about. And I was pretty impressed with the wide scope of issues that the center's trying to address, looking at behavioral health, cancer, cardiac issues, firefighter physicals, health and wellness from the fitness as well as the nutrition standpoint, is certainly a wide array of things that that you folks are looking at. But the one thing on the webpage that kind of stood out to me was the mission, vision, and core values of the center. And certainly would love to hear your thoughts on where you're heading with all that stuff.
Yeah, and I appreciate you doing that, Tommy. So, you know, for those that are not familiar with the First Responder Center for Excellence, you know, the board of directors from the Fallen Firefighters Foundation created us as a separate nonprofit to really focus on the health and wellness issues that's contributing to the line of duty deaths. So, you know, if you look at the pie graph that so many of us is keen of, you know, the allocation of line of duty deaths, the health and wellness portion of that is by far the largest. And that's only going to increase, you know, with some recent rulings recognizing suicide, you know, as line of duty potential. You know, the mental health in the fire service continues to be an issue. And, you know, kudos to the board of directors for recognizing that the magnitude of these contributing factors to the line of duty deaths and realizing that we need to have somebody just solely focus on these particular issues. So, you know, I'm very honored to have this position. You know, I'm fortunate that I get to travel the country and work with by far the top researchers in all those subjects. And it's absolutely amazing what they're doing behind the scenes that, you know, I would venture to say 90% of the fire service has no idea what's going on. I call them our unsung heroes. You know, everybody looks at the fire service as, you know, a group of heroes. Well, those researchers, they're our heroes, because it's amazing just in the last 5 years, the information that they've been able to get the fire service to really start transforming us into a smarter fire service and ultimately, you know, a healthier and safer fire service.
I noticed, Gary, that some of the older programs that the one that I have attended, and you have to give me a second because I like computers shut down, but like stress first aid, I guess that's living with you guys now?
Yeah, so we took over the stress first aid, and we're right in the middle, and literally right in the middle of revising that program. Currently, it sits on the FRCE website, and you can do an online training component. We also offer in-person training opportunities. But we just recently, you know, in the past year, received a grant from November, the mustache people that created that trend for the month of November, letting the mustache grow out, which is not very helpful for me because I have a hard time growing any kind of facial hair. But they were gracious enough to give us a grant, one of only two grants that they issued to the United States since they are based out of Australia. And that gave us the opportunity to revise the stress first aid. And we're shifting the focus, although we're not completely moving away from a overall presentation that fits everybody in the fire service, but we're really kind of trying to target now the company officer who we feel and our advisory committee feels, you know, kind of has more of a global view of what's going on in the firehouse and kind of a direct relationship with each and every one. So we're trying to give them the tools that they need to recognize that somebody's having, you know, problems or issues, and kind of giving them some steps and, you know, a couple little tools in their toolbox to be able to help someone that they recognize as maybe struggling a little bit. You know, I do encourage, if you haven't taken it, you know, to go on there. It does provide, it definitely gets you thinking about, you know, how would I handle, you know, something that I recognized. And, you know, we're good at a lot of things. We're not good at sometimes at communicating with one another and kind of letting our magical shield down, and saying, hey, I need help. And, you know, luckily, you know, with programs like that, it's becoming a little bit easier. So,
can I just jump in for 1 second, Tom? I think that, giving the company officer the toolbox is key, because, you know, with the company, they say so goes the officer, so goes the men and women. So I think that's a key strategy on your part, on the part of the program. Because that company officer is the go-to person for the rest of the crew, day and night. You know, the chief isn't always there, the deputies aren't there. You know, you might be a shift commander who's in another house on the other side of the county, but the company officer is with his people or her people all the time. So that's a great strategy for you guys, and I all of them agree. It's a great idea. Great idea.
Thanks, Ron.
So, Gary, what was some of the thoughts behind, I'm looking at the videos for Doc Talk, and you there?
Yeah, you there? Did I lose you?
Yeah, I thought I lost you for a second. The Doc Talk videos that are on the website. Whose brainchild was that, and where's that info coming from?
So, luckily for us, we have a great partnership with Sarah Jenke, Dr. Jenke, and her group of researchers. Put those together, developed the content, worked with the different doctors, you know, to provide that information, and then through our partnership, they allow us to house those particular videos on our website. I can't stress enough the amount of work that the researchers are doing and how great it is to be in a position that, I get to work with the top researchers and any component of the fire service, whether it's, you know, nutrition, fitness, fire behavior, now, to be able to sit and listen to what these folks are discovering, and you know how they can prove, you know, the theories or the new concepts that they're developing, they're transforming our fire service, and you know it's going to take some years, but you know through these partnerships that we're having and getting their information out. It's going to be crucial. So, you know, kudos to her. You can see a lot more of what they're doing on their website. It's a Science Alliance is her latest venture. She has a few organizations and companies that she's running, but that particular one is trying to take the research world and connect them to the station personnel. And providing relevant information that they can use and understand on a daily basis.
Cool. So I also noticed that the 2023 Health and Wellness Symposium is going to be coming up in January. What can we expect to see at that event?
Well, what I will say, Tommy, and for all your listeners, if you are even a little bit interested in health and wellness in the fire service, that's the week to go. We have partnered with the Fire Department Safety Officer organization to present, as well as Sarah Jenke Science Alliance organization, to present a week-long health and wellness symposium. So the first couple days will be the Fire Department Safety Officer Conference that they hold every year annually. This year and St. Pete's, Florida. They alternate between West Coast and East Coast. That'll be first 2 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Sarah's group, the Science Alliance group, will present all day seminars or presentations, I should say, on the research that they're doing, what the results are, and how it applies to the fire service and, again, to, you know, the people in the station. So that's something that's new that's never really been done, is trying to create some kind of a medium to to get that information from that world down to us. So I'm really excited about that. And then the next 2 days we'll focus on just health and wellness. It will be the FRCE conference on the 19th and the 20th. And again, we have some great speakers talking about some great subjects, you know, that touches all of our subject areas, the cardiac, health and wellness, fitness, nutrition, mental health. We're touching on a lot of subjects. So that's going to be, I'm really excited. You could probably tell about that week. I think moving forward, that partnership will be the signature event for health and wellness in the fire service. And you know, that's, I think the information that, health and wellness officers, safety officers, you know, anybody that's part of that area in the fire service is going to benefit greatly from coming to that. Because I get a lot of phone calls throughout the months of, hey, I just became a safety officer or a health and wellness officer. What do I do? And this is really going to give you a lot of good information, good directions, and again, going back to the tools and the toolkit to kind of get someone started or to kind of enhance what they've already been doing.
Cool, Gary. That's great info. And hopefully you guys will have a very successful event down there looking at the health and wellness issues. Ron, do you got anything for Gary?
No, I don't. I kind of left the this evening's interview with you, sir. But it's about that time. We hit the witching hour here, buddy. Do you have a roll call for tonight, or are we gonna forego that in light of the Memorial Weekend?
Actually, I do have one, and we were last on the air August 22nd, and there's been 7 line of duty deaths since then. On August 27th, Gary DeCook from Barnes City, Iowa, suffered a heart attack. September 20th. Geraldo Rincon from the Salmon, Idaho Fire Department passed away from an unknown medical. On September 23rd, Charles Campolta from Alvin, Texas, also suffered a heart attack. September 30th, Timothy Fledger from Keyport, New Jersey, died from injuries sustained in a motor vehicle crash. October 2nd, Michael Moody from Purdom, Nebraska, a heart attack. October 4th, Curtis Brown and Brendan Torres from Delhart, Texas, passed away in a head-on motor vehicle accident while they were returning to quarters. Again, as we speak of this, please heed the lessons that they have left for us, and keep their families in your thoughts and prayers.
Thanks, Tom. With that, I want to thank our good friend Gary Critchbaum for coming up on the back step with us tonight to talk about the FRC and all the good stuff that they're doing. Gary, thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you, Ron, and thank you and Tom for everything that you did this past weekend and what you all continue to do for the whole fire service. I think your listeners appreciate the information that you're providing, and this is information that we need to get out there and share. So thank you all for everything that you're doing.
Thanks,
Gary.
So until we're up on the back step again, and I'm not sure when that'll be, but it'll be soon. Don't forget, be safe, slow down, buckle up, eat right, eat light, stop the red, use your head,
watch how you drive, arrive alive, and hug your family and hug your kids and hug them tight when you say goodnight. So with that, we're going to say goodnight to all of you out there in Radio Land and to my good friends Tommy and Gary. And we'll see you on the backstep real soon. Good night, everybody.
Stay safe, everybody.